Straight up evil.
Leave the dog alone because the dog didn't do a damn thing, and now you're trying to feed him your bodily
Thou
fluid.
Shall kill all of your
fans. Had a dog fish a tampon out of the garbage. It ain't right
to Bible pages. But you can pretend like you will. A dog.
Wow.
Jody,
Jody
what?
It's a good Jody, not a bad Jody. It's a good Jody.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Straight Up Evil. My name is Jocelyn. I'm the brunette. We've got Katie. She's the redhead.
Hello.
And we have Carly. She's the blonde.
Hi.
Quinnies, this episode was requested by two different listeners, Kelly back in November 2021, also Brandon in early 2022. Thank you very much for requesting. If that gives you an idea of how backed up we are, we're looking at requests
it's
from 2021 at this point.
It's
you know, it's a time right
it's
now.
It's a time.
It's a time.
It's
a time.
It's because our Quinnies love us so much and they send us so many good recommendations.
So many good ones.
That
it's
we
hard
will
to pick
literally
from.
Never be on caught up. We'll never.
No. No, literally we'll never run out. We'll
it's
never
okay.
run out.
And we're and in the we're in the bang season right now.
We're
so.
In the bang season.
We're in the bang season, of course. I'd bring up Daniel Nellis in this episode. So
oh,
yeah,
no.
We are in the bang
okay.
season.
Okay.
But tonight's main episode of Straight Up Evil, basically just an extended Straight Up Missing, but it's so much more complicated than our usual missing persons case that we bring you every week, that Carly brings you every week. This is just a longer, more drawn out thing. So of course, tonight we're talking about the disappearance of Jody Huizentrout. So Jody Sue Huizentrout disappeared in the early morning hours of June 27th, 1995, likely from the parking lot outside of her apartment in Mason City, Iowa. At the time, Jody was working as the morning news anchor for KIMT, which is a CBS station in the Mason City area. Despite signs of a struggle, evidence of foul play, all of the things. No suspect has ever been formally identified, and Jody has never been located to this day.
So frustrated.
I don't understand.
It's just
so annoying.
We're coming up on 28 years that the woman has disappeared, and we don't know anything.
Longer than she was alive. Or
longer than
around.
She was alive. Police do believe that Jody was abducted. Despite all of this, that is their line. They believe it was an abduction. So before we get into Jody's actual disappearance, we got to give a huge shout out to the Find Jody podcast and just Find Jody organization in general. We could talk about this case for the next 30 episodes. We're covering it because it is an active missing in our eyes, and I think still in the eyes of the police department. This is a group of volunteers. They started in 2001. They're trying to keep Jody's case in the spotlight. They have over 30 episodes. If you want more information, check out Find Jody wherever you get your podcasts. Hit up findjody.com. Tons of resources on this case, ways that you can submit a tip, all the information on the law enforcement agencies. Also, got to give a big shout out to Uncovered, which is another fantastic organization. They have a great timeline of this case. You should check them out too. They'll be in our show notes. They are all about bringing communities together to solve cold cases. So just two awesome organizations, Uncovered, Find Jody. Check it out, like, subscribe, do all the things. Do all the things that we never tell you to do for Straight Up Evil.
Yeah.
Do that for them.
Do that.
So Jody Huizentrout.
I always want to say Huizentrout.
Huizentrout.
And people do say that she had the Minnesota.
Yeah, the thick accent.
Minnesota.
Huizentrout. Born on June 5th.
Same birthday as my mom.
Wow, Quinnie.
June 5th, ooh. Gemini. Yeah, she was a Gemini.
1968. And she was born in Long Prairie, Minnesota. That's funny. That's not the only birthday that's going to come up. Mm-hmm. So same as Katie's mom. She was born to Maurice and Imogen Huizentrout. She was the youngest child, and she's described by pretty much everyone forever as an outgoing, bubbly person. She was very friendly very talkative, very bubbly person. That's just, you hear that from everybody. She was known for just being an incredibly positive person. You can kind of see it in her pictures. You know who she reminds me of, Quinny's, is Benita Zahn.
Yes.
Totally can see that. I feel
like she, if she had, totally. Not, if her life had not been cut short like this, that's who she would become.
Absolutely.
Is yes. like a Benita Zahn type. Yeah. That's just a local anchor.
I totally see it.
And she's just, the pictures, I'm just like, wow, that's like young Benita. Unfortunately, Jody's father, Maurice, actually died when she was very young. And I'm unclear if her mother ever remarried. I didn't get any information on that. I honestly don't have much on her family. And I didn't really dig in that department because, you know, people don't ask for this kind of attention. We know she was a gifted golf player. Her high school golf team won the Class A state championships 2 years in a row, 85 and 86. So that is very impressive. And I just love women who are good at golf. I'm just like obsessed with the idea. Like,
love it.
I just think it's so cool. I know nothing about it. Miniature golf is like, I cap My out God. At miniature golf.
I know a little bit about golf.
Do you?
My father is an avid golfer.
Okay.
I grew up watching golf. I did a little bit of extracurricular golfing whilst in middle school for a very short stint.
Okay. My mom wanted me to do it, but I never did.
That's awesome.
That's
though.
Really awesome. Yeah.
I think I it's should. So awesome.
Said no one ever.
I think it's so awesome. I really do. Like golf is a crazy awesome game. Like
I can golf a little bit.
My God. I love it. I've been to a driving range.
I would love to see that. Going to the driving range.
The driving range is the shit. That is the shit. So good. You get pissed off. You hit a bucket of balls. That's a lot of fun.
Let me get me one of them bucket of balls.
But she was really good at golf.
She was.
She was really good at it. And after high school, she went to St. Cloud University. She was a broadcast journalism double major. So she studied mass communication and speech communication. She graduated in 1990. And her first job out of college, she was a flight attendant. Another Carly parallel.
I know. Here. Like, I don't know. Apparently.
Just another Except Carly for the wrinkle. Fact
that I would rather die than be a newscaster because you couldn't pay me enough money because I would be so scared. Other than that, we got some parallels going on.
It is not an easy job.
No.
I'm good on that.
But, you know, she's a flight attendant to start, but then she eventually gets a broadcasting job with KGAN in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. And then she changes jobs, goes back to Minnesota, and she's an anchor at KSAX in Alexandria. And then she goes back to Iowa to KIMT to anchor the morning news.
She was like hopping around.
Yeah. And she's in her 20s and she's pretty much fresh out of college, you know, and she's the way that the woman, there's a female journalist, I'm forgetting her name, but she speaks on the Find Jody podcast. And she's like, this is what you do is you just pay your dues in your 20s. Mm-hmm. You hop around to the best paying job and it's really not very much money.
Was it Robin? Was it her friend Robin?
Yes, I think it was Robin. Yes, thank you. You kind of have to travel and you kind of have to be open to changing around. So that's exactly what she did. She had only been at KIMT for about a year and a half, a little less when she disappeared. At the time of her disappearance, Jody's living in Iowa. Her close friends and family are back in Minnesota. And some of them have actually moved to other states, right? Like she had friends from college that eventually moved to other states that come into play. So she's living in a town, you know, she doesn't know anyone extremely well there. She's got many friends, but she doesn't have like family or people who knew her for years and years that live where this happened. You know, it kind of reminds me of Maura Murray.
Yeah.
A little bit that like, there's really nobody close by. It's not until she goes missing that the family has to come from another state to figure out what's going on. So June 26th, 1995, my birthday, Quinny's. Okay. I was probably sleeping off a cake hangover. I was 8 years old on this day. Okay.
Sleeping off a cake hangover.
I was probably taking a long sugar nap, but Jody on this day was reading the news as she regularly did, 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. block. It was called Daybreak with Jody Huizentrude. So this required her to be at work between 3 a.m. and 4 a.m. So We're going to talk a lot about this, but I think for now we can all agree that's a punishing schedule.
Yeah.
That's rough.
You got to really love your job and really
you got to want it. Yep. You got to be driven, all the things, which by all accounts she was. She seemed to like it. She seemed to like her job and she was very good at it. There's no one who disputes that. She was a great anchor. She had it. She was going places. So
you
after
can tell just by listening to
yes.
us, like you
yes.
can tell.
FindJody.com has a bunch of videos of her coverage and you're just like, she's doing it. Like she is.
Yeah,
she's killing it. So after she gets done, she goes to the annual Mason City Chamber of Commerce golf tournament. This is a charity fundraiser. Like we said, she's a shark out there. So I think the station was like, send Jody, you know, because she's very good at it. And she's also very beautiful. And she's the face of our morning news. You know, there's going to be press and pictures and all the things, and she can do all of that. This is really, it's a charity event, but I do feel like it's work.
Totally.
Like she was basically still at work. So this is at the Highland Park Golf Course, and this starts at 9 a.m. She goes to this event with the news director from KIMT. He's also there, but he goes on to say he really didn't see Jody very much that whole day. And most of the time, you know, at these tournaments, they just pair you up with whoever. So you're not really going to be with the people that you came with anyway. Jody's team was herself. There were two local businessmen and there was one KIMT sales associate that was there. We don't know their names. They have never been mentioned by police as any significance in this case. But they do provide some interesting information. So they said that Jody was receiving inappropriate phone calls. She said something about this to them. She made some comment during the tournament. She wanted to change her phone number. Cell phones are in their infancy at this point. I have to believe that we're talking about a landline here, changing her home phone number. I don't know if she had a cell phone, to be honest with you, but I haven't seen anything that
no,
she
I think
did.
They said
a car phone
Jody
or
that they didn't see ever any record of her having a cell phone.
Yeah, that makes sense. So it must be her landline that we're
talking
about.
Landline at home, yeah.
Yeah. So she plays 18 holes of golf and she's in golf clothes and she's sweaty. And so she goes home to change. She changes into something nice because there's an awards dinner right after the tournament. Okay, so this is approximately 3:30 p.m. that she gets back to the golf course. So just think about this. Okay. You woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning for work. It's now 12 hours later. In that time, you've read the morning news. You played 18 holes of golf. You went home, you changed, you got dressed for an awards dinner. And now you're showing up to the awards dinner, like looking beautiful and whatever.
Right. But remember, there's that question about whether because someone said that it was possible that it got rained out.
The golf.
Yeah.
Yeah. So dry clothes.
Right.
Right. So does that
did she do the whole 18 holes? When did it get canceled? Like, what's the deal? Like, what time, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's never been really officially locked down.
So yeah. Is it possible she got rained on and wanted to go home and put herself back together, go to this thing? Possible. Other possibility. There's definitely going to be cameras there. This is going to be a press event. So maybe she just wants to look her best. We really don't know. So she's back 3:30-ish. We have the golf team again stating that Jody's talking about getting annoying phone calls. I don't know if this is a private caller or a telemarketer.
Yeah.
Which is like huge in the 90s. Like people talk about spam calls now and like in the
Nothing
90s.
Like it was.
No.
I was going to say, this is the day and age when you memorized, like when you used to memorize people's numbers.
Yes.
Like
caller ID was just becoming a thing.
I don't know.
Caller ID
know.
Was like all the new age. If you had caller ID, you were like rich.
But if you had a digital screen on your cordless phone,
get it.
Coolest ever.
Oh my God. One of those see-through phones that can see all the wires.
Yes.
Oh my
top
so
tier.
Cool.
I always wanted one of those.
So did I.
Me too.
My friend Kelsey had one.
Fucking Kelsey.
And I always wanted the colored Mac when the first Mac, remember the colored Macs?
Yes. And you could see the back of those.
Yes.
Yes.
I wanted one of those so
freaking
bad. But you had to have You had to have like a grand in the at 90s.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. They were so expensive. Never because happened. We have bonded over Teddy Ruxpin. Okay. Yeah. Teddy oh Ruxpin. My God. The Teddy. See-through phones, the see-through Max. Like, we didn't have any of that shit.
The razor.
Okay? No.
I did have the razor.
Did you that. Have the razor?
I had the razor. Yeah.
Sweet.
I got the I razor. Did. Yeah.
I had like the Nextel brick.
Yeah,
phone like not.
Cute. I had a BlackBerry for a second.
I also had a BlackBerry. I also had a BlackBerry for a point.
That is old school.
Oh, but so back to her phone calls though, because mm-hmm. it's weird because everyone says like she's talking about these annoying phone calls, mm-hmm. and I feel like they use the word annoying a lot, but then other places have said that they were nasty phone calls. So it, you know, scammer or spam calls. Sometimes they can be nasty.
I feel like that's also right. could be you a know, little bit like, of just like mixed media.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly.
You know,
so we really don't yeah. know. Is this like an actual perv or is it just.
Or someone remember. Calling you like D'Angelo style saying fucked right. up stuff to you exactly. on the phone. Exactly.
Yeah. Or like Quinny said, is it just a telemarketer that's calling? Like,
we've been frantically trying to reach you about your car's extended warranty.
Because you're right. Know? But like, you're okay. right, though. Like, and back in that day, they would. They would call you three, five times in a day.
Fanatically. Yeah.
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 My sister and I used to say the most ridiculous shit when telemarketers called. Like oh anything God. We could think of. Anything. Anything.
Just answer the phone and go bang. And then hang up.
Bang.
No, I had one. It was like. This is Mr. Bubbles from the Mr. Bubbles industry, and I'm just calling to tell you about our wonderful new product, Mr. Bubbles Bubble Bath. It comes in three exquisite flavors. Tropical Choppy. I don't remember the flavors. Oh, I used to do that all the time, dude. Oh, I'm not even kidding.
The exquisite flavors.
They were dirty. They were like dreamsicle blowjob or something like that. And like chicka chicka cherry.
Oh my God.
Dead. I am officially. Oh, I used to pretend I was a child. That's all.
Yes, we would pretend couldn't. We were kids. We would say ridiculous shit. Like, you know, but no, not yeah. nothing as good as Mr. Bubbles.
Well, I lost it. Once we got to the flavors, I fucking couldn't do it. I couldn't keep it straight anymore.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Well, maybe Jody was getting calls from Mr. Bubbles. We don't know.
We don't know.
But she mentions it again. So just a couple of times. Then she does eventually leave after 8 p.m. Leaves the country club after 8 p.m. because she has to work the next morning at 3 a.m. She does. I think it's important to note here. She does not Irish goodbye. There are several people who are like, she said goodbye to her boss. She said goodbye to the people on her team. She right. thanked the people at the country club for putting on such a wonderful day. Like she literally, and I just think that speaks, she's 27 yeah. years old. Yeah. I just think that speaks to like, this girl is, she's ambitious. She's
genuine. Trying to
make an impression.
Networking,
absolutely. Socializing. She's putting her best face forward. Like,
becoming part of the community.
She really is.
Yeah. But also just like a genuine person too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's not fake. It's like no. she actually right. does seem to care.
Yeah. Like she follows through with these yeah. things.
Right.
It's really, you just don't see it nowadays. Damn it. This is where things start to get a little bit murky, Quinns. So we know that Jody called her friend Kelly Torgerson. They're friends from college. Kelly now lives in Mississippi. And she calls her at her landline in Mississippi. And Jody's calling from her landline at 8:24 p.m. Kelly's not home, but Jody speaks to Kelly's husband. And he takes a message and they make some small talk. You know, he's like, hey, it was just your birthday. How was your birthday? Because Jody turned 27 3 weeks and a day before she disappeared. So he's like, hey, you know, happy birthday. How was everything? It was a short phone call. So after Jody disappeared, a man named John Van Sice comes forward to investigators and tells them that after that phone call, Jody came over to his house to watch a video of her birthday party, her surprise birthday party that he threw for her. And someone,
yeah, this is weird to me.
Someone had, there's a whole theory section, Quinn. This is me trying to get Carly not to talk about Terry Hobbs. This is like, we got all the theories, yeah, and he's the final one, and he gets all the time. He gets
I'm reining it in, yes.
Because he is, in many ways, the most viable suspect in this case, without question. He is the one that you can't untie from this. And he's never been named a suspect, and he's, you know, obviously, we're not accusing him of anything, but he is the one.
But something ain't clean.
You just can't. Law enforcement must know something that we don't, because there's just...
Have they ever said he's officially cleared?
No.
No.
So they had recorded her surprise party on a camcorder. Okay, Quinnies. For those of you who don't know, a camcorder is a large thing that recorded things before we had iPhones. Okay.
It was a heavy ass brick.
Heavy ass brick. And you had to put your one eye up to it. Yep. And it was always
your little tape.
Sometimes the window came out of the side.
Yeah. And it's always like your dad or your mom being like trying to point different directions and be like, no, oh,
or one eye, or one eye, like with this.
The other one, like,
I can't.
John Van Cise tells investigators this. We're going to talk a lot more about John because we're going to get into theories very shortly here. We don't know when Jody left his house. We don't know when Jody got home. John says that she left by 10 p.m. And he says the last that he saw of her was her going down the stairs, leaving his apartment. Do me a favor, Quinnies, and watch your friend get into their house, into their vehicle, into, like, do not be the one who says, I just let her walk out the door and I don't know where
absolutely
she went.
Not.
So he's the only person who says that.
Exactly.
He's the only person who can corroborate
There's
absolutely no information out there that we know that she went over there. So we're going to come back to John in like a page and a half. So 3 a.m., June 27th, 1995. Jody's not at work. What the hell? It seems like people show up between 3 and 4 for this job. There's no set, you must be here by 3 a.m. But most people do not roll up after 4. 4 a.m. comes, still no Jody. Her associate producer, her name's Amy Coons. We're also going to talk about her in our theory section. She comes up all the time. She called Jody shortly after 4 a.m. and is like, hey, are you coming to work? Jody reportedly responded, what time is it? So most believe that this is a clear indication that she overslept. Some people report that she was never late for work before. This is not true. Jody had been late on some occasions prior. It wasn't like a chronic problem, but she had been late before. And I am here to tell you, this is totally normal. I had a job in my 20s where I had to arrive at 4:15 a.m. People were late all the time. You oversleep. It happens. It's just, it's expected. I just don't make much out of that. I really don't. I just don't feel like it was out of the ordinary for that type of job or for her.
At that age, either. Yeah,
right. Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. And like, really, it's just the time. People oversleep. It's absolutely. It's the middle of the night, essentially.
And like, she just had that long ass day.
Yeah.
You know? Right. Right. Yeah. Exactly.
She had another, another coworker who she was friends with who did the nighttime news. And said that she would get home at like 10 o'clock at night and Jody would call her and be like, what are you doing? You want to like go get a drink? And she's like, Jody, you had to be at work at 3 a.m. And she'd be like, yeah, whatever. I got to live my life.
It's true.
It is.
I wouldn't be able to function.
No. So she overslept. Amy said that Jody sounded okay, but she was frazzled, you know, because she was just woken up and she's like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'll be there as soon as possible. Station is 5 minutes from Jody's apartment by car. 5 minute drive, 4 a.m. This phone call takes place. 5 a.m. comes, no Jody. Amy calls again, this time, no response. No one answers the phone. Amy actually had to anchor the 6 a.m. news herself because Jody didn't show up. And Amy gives a ton of interviews after this case. They're all over YouTube. You can see them. And people make a really big deal out of the fact that she goes on to say she was really pissed at Jody that morning for not showing up.
Sure.
She was like, I'm not trying to go on the news this morning,
ma'am. She was the producer. She was not the person on camera.
No, no. Like, she was not happy about this at all. People are like, oh, well, you know, that means that there's something suspicious about this. And then later there's an interview where they're like, well, were you guys friends? And Amy's like, no, we work together. And people are like, well, why are you saying that you weren't her friend? You're just like, I don't know. People make a big deal out of Amy Coons. I really don't see it. I don't think this is a big deal. And, you know, I would also be like, okay, what the hell? You told me that you were on your way here.
I had to call you to wake you up in the first place. Like, get it together.
Right.
And like, right. Yeah, like, what the hell? It's not cool. However, in speaking to Amy Coon's character, 10 minutes after she finishes that broadcast, she goes to the news director and says, you need to call the police and ask for a welfare check on behalf of her employer. She was really worried by this point when she did not show up that entire time. She was like, no, this doesn't make any sense. She wouldn't just not come here. Like, it's possible that she could fall back to sleep. I give her so much credit for saying somebody call the police.
Yeah,
because they were there within hours of this happening, and so much evidence could have been disturbed. We could know so much less than we know. So the police are at the apartment by 7:16 a.m. Super fast, right? Immediately, they realize that a crime has been committed. Absolutely. They're in the parking lot of her apartment complex. They are standing by Jody's red Mazda Miata, which was her car. They find many items. Jody's car key is on the ground. And it's bent. The driver's side mirror to her vehicle is bent forward. Like, you can literally just see someone being dragged away from their car. Mm-hmm. Like, you can just see someone grabbing onto whatever they could grab onto. Her heels, her blow dryer, her hairspray, her earrings just strewn around on the ground next to her car. Mm-mm. Not good. Mm-mm. Not good. There's a partial palm print on her car. There's scuff marks on the ground. There's drag marks on the ground. And the police are like, okay, this is a struggle. We have to tape this off. This is obvious sign of a struggle. They go up to Jody's apartment and it's reported that nothing seemed out of place. Now, I don't know how they know that. I don't know how they got in. Right. I don't know how they figured that out. I don't know if the door was unlocked. Did they break it open?
Did they use one of the keys that are on the ground?
Right.
That
like
disturb the scene.
I don't really get that.
Yeah.
They say that nothing was out of place, but like, I don't really know. There's some contention that her briefcase was never found, but that's not every source reports that she would have had her briefcase with her and it's never been located. So they start knocking on some doors and speaking to some neighbors. Now, some neighbors, because there are a lot of people who come forward after the fact and be like, police never talked to me. Police never said anything to me. And I'm like, okay, how do you decide which neighbors you talk to? They only spoke to some neighbors and not all, which is just really unfortunate in these situations. Yeah. So there was one neighbor who reported that they heard a scream sometime around 4:30 a.m. that day. There's also a man who lived on the street where Jody's apartment complex was located. So he doesn't live in the complex, but he lives on the street where the complex is. And he says that he saw a white or light colored van. This is possibly a mid-80s white Ford windowless Econoline.
I literally...
Yeah,
the creeper van. It is of straight the century. Out.
Exactly,
straight creeper van. That's exactly what I was going to say.
Nobody should be allowed to drive it. Nobody.
No,
get rid of these vans.
We gotta get rid of all white creeper vans.
It's parked on the street that morning. Now, this is weird to him. And this is why he says that he noticed it, because he's like, nobody really parks on the street here. First of all, there's an apartment complex with a huge parking lot right there. Available to park in. And almost every house or apartment in the area has off-street parking. So nobody really parks out there like that. And this creeper van is just chilling. And keep in mind, the sun does not come up that day until 5:30. So whatever happened to Jody happened in the dark. Again, there's a creeper van parked there in the dark. So who shows up on the crime scene but John Van Sice? And he tells police what we said earlier. Hey, she was with me last night to watch the video of her party. And he also unfortunately says that he was the last person to see Jody alive. And he also refers to her in the past tense. There is a retired detective that speaks on Find Jody. That's like, you know, when people have lost someone to a violent crime, or been touched by violent crime, they just say a lot of things that don't make them look very good. And like, it's just a truth.
It is. I totally agree.
You know, totally it's just, it's hard to like make the call just from that. You make of it what you will. We're going to get into John shortly. There's a bunch of other things that come into play with him. So he also tells police, oh, and I was also with her the previous weekend, just this past weekend. He said that he, Jody, and a group of other friends went to Iowa City, Iowa on a water skiing trip. Because John has a boat. He has a boat named Jody, named after Jody.
Oh, okay.
I could vomit everywhere.
This is same guy. This is same homeboy that had her over for the video.
Yeah. That says that he had her over for the video. Yep.
Of her on
for
her
the birthday party he threw.
That
for
he the birthday made. Party that he threw. Yep.
Okay, so at this point, homeboy is obsessed with girl. Homeboy has an obsession with her. That's what we've learned so far. Okay, so continue, Quinny.
So we get a search almost immediately. FBI are immediately involved. Then we get the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation. The search had, we got volunteers, we got divers, rescue teams, we got the dogs sniffing around because they're in close proximity to the Winnebago River. So we got to think about water. I have some media outlets reporting that the dogs hit on Jody's scent in the apartment complex parking lot, but there's really not much information about these searches. And if law enforcement has that information, they're not telling us.
Well, I read about it. That there were the scent dogs.
Yes.
But then there were also the cadaver dogs.
Oh, I just have scent dogs and police dogs.
Right. So they did hit on Jody there, of course.
In the apartment complex.
Right.
Yes.
But then there were cadaver dogs near the water. They hit on human remains.
On remains. Okay.
However, by the river. Nothing was found. And they decided that the dogs must have gotten confused.
Something wrong.
Human animal right. remains instead.
Incorrect.
False.
Bullshit.
Bullshit.
The dogs false. Don't get it the wrong. The
dogs are always right.
May not have no been matter Jody. What. We don't know.
We don't
but
know.
They're not wrong.
Correct.
How exactly. dare you? How dare you?
The dogs will be more right than you ever will be.
Honestly. Then they also
don't
say
question the dog.
The dog cannot respond to your accusations. Okay.
They can't defend okay? themselves in a court of law.
They don't have a voice. They only have a bark.
Also, there's this weird little detail that there were Bud Light cans in Jody's apartment and everybody said she didn't drink Bud Light. And then someone said that there's also another detail that the toilet seat was up.
They're like really into strange. That toilet seat.
Strange. Yeah, like, but that's actually legit strange. Like someone was in her apartment after or something.
Was it a
cop? I don't
cop?
Like it.
Did a cop take a leak in there?
Okay, I mean, this was the 90s.
I can't.
This was the 90s. I mean, it was a very different time, you know, back then.
I have a theory about the toilet, but we'll get into it later.
Yeah. True Crime Garage is like, did she throw up? Like, did she wake up hungover and throw up? Did she have a few BLs before she went to bed? Let the woman live.
Let her live her life.
Let her live her life. You don't know. You don't know if somebody came over and brought a bunch of beer that she wouldn't normally drink and it just happens to be there and she's like, screw it.
That's what I was going to say.
On a whim like, one day when I have nothing else.
Like, yeah.
And who fucking cares either way, really? Hey? Okay.
Yeah. Leave her alone.
Also, like, I'm sorry, but I know that we weren't super advanced in technology, but they still did have DNA testing by this point.
Yes, they did. There's also some contention that a hair was found.
Right.
You hear these things and you think, okay, we're going to find out more. We're going to get more information. But really nothing comes of these things. And it's just so frustrating.
It's so frustrating. And it's like in other cases, they have truly nothing.
Yeah, like we see every week, right?
Exactly. They have so many things that could really lead somewhere. And yet it doesn't.
Like, and yet still nothing. Yeah.
How? They didn't listen to the dogs. I mean, obviously. Okay, whatever.
Like you guys are like, you're fucking this up. Like we're just watching them fuck this up in slow motion.
Yeah.
Mistake number one, you fucking talk shit on the dogs.
Mistake number two, one of the officers took a piss in the apartment and nobody can deal with it now.
Yeah. Mistake number three, an officer probably left the fucking beers in there too.
They had a couple BLs when they got done. And you have to consider all these possibilities because again, we don't fucking know. So we're by September of 1995, Jody's family has now hired 3 private investigators, and a couple from Minneapolis and then one from Omaha, Nebraska. They're all looking into Jody's case. Okay. That cannot be cheap.
No. 3 of them?
3 of them.
No. Not to mention the fact that it's completely heartbreaking.
It is.
Yeah. As
it
well.
It really is. It really is. And like, we talk about this all the time. Just the family should not be having to do this investigation themselves.
No.
So I just really, and at this point, Jody's job at KIMT is still just getting people to fill in for her. They are completely unwilling to replace her. They're keeping hope alive because of these private investigators and because of their involvement. She is featured on America's Most Wanted, John Walsh Forever, Unsolved Mysteries, another one of the greatest television shows of all time.
Walsh for life.
And then by the time we get into the more recent history, she's covered on 2020. You got the team of private investigators, and some of Jody's family actually travel all the way to LA and they start meeting with psychics. Now, we've seen this in Delphi. We've seen this in just countless cases. Everyone has their own beliefs about psychics. I have absolutely no problem with the family of a missing person or a murder victim doing whatever they feel like they have to do to get answers.
Exactly.
I'm never going to fault them for that. However, I get really pissed in this part of the story because I feel like they were just taken for a ride. In this particular instance, I really don't think that they had to fly to Los Angeles to hear someone say one of her coworkers had a grudge against her and killed her. First of all of her coworkers are at work. Everyone is at work waiting for her to show up. It just kills me. These people have hired 3 private investigators. They're going to television. A lot of times you have to pay to be on TV as well. So like, that's also racking up the bill. Like when you see people on Good Morning America, they pay like 20 grand to be there.
Oh yeah.
Now they're on all of these shows and they're getting all these private investigators and they're doing what they can do. And now they fly all the way to Los Angeles to talk to 3 separate psychics who tell them it was someone at her work who did it.
It's kind of frustrating. It's frustrating.
It is. It's frustrating. And yeah. I really don't want to make it about using a psychic because I have no problem with that. Like, no. I don't fault them for that, but I just feel like to go all the way there and have them say that, I'm like, man, oh God.
I don't know. I think if you ever go into it, like you have to have like set intentions and you just like can't really intend for it to be the say all be all of what happened to your child or your friend or, you know, whatever. It's like, thank you for your insight. I don't know. Using it as closure is just like not going to be helpful because they're most likely there's a big chance that they might not be right.
Then they use the footage of this grieving family talking to psychics for the TV show Psychic Detectives, even despite the fact she's on America's Most Wanted, she's on Unsolved Mysteries, local TV's running her story all the time. Now she's on Psychic Detectives. None of these television appearances result in any type of suspect identification. Like, this is the type of coverage that we dream about for our missing persons cases.
Seriously.
And nothing. May 1996, we're into now, we get another search. And this time they're in Cerro Gordon County, Iowa. I don't really know why. Apparently law enforcement is interested in that area.
But we don't know why. Yeah.
No idea why.
It's so random.
And then they don't locate any evidence. They say that the search was fruitless. So we don't even know why they were there. So then unfortunately, Jody is actually declared legally dead in 2001. So this is 6 years after her disappearance. So then in 2008, photocopies of 84 pages of Jody Huizentrout's personal diary are mailed anonymously to the Mason City Globe Gazette.
Yeah. Like, what is up with this? And it's like a wife. It ends up being like a wife of a police.
Yeah. Yes.
Officer,
so
right?
This is where we're going to start folding in some of the, we are a paragraph away from theories, Quinnies. And this is where we're going to start folding in some of the police.
Yeah, because it's killing me.
Angles.
That's a lot.
Because, man, it is just.
It's a lot.
So we find out that the police chief that was working for the Mason City, Iowa Police Department on the Jody Who's in Truth case had, quote, accidentally brought a copy of the diary home with him after he retired.
I can't. This is why we give the evidence to Carlin.
Like every Carlin. Episode.
This is like 350 confidential documents that the president has that he didn't know he had. It's just like, what are we saying?
Seriously.
Right now?
This like sucks just getting emails.
Meanwhile,
to the
they're
wrong
spread out. Meanwhile, they're
reason.
Spread out all over your mistress's bed. Okay. Oh, the God. Contracts just freaking spread out everywhere. Right. The glove did not fit.
His accidentally brought a copy of the diary home with him after he retired. Explain
oh God,
it to me.
I don't know, guys. The copy of the journal just like fell into my pocket.
Yeah.
Oh,
and let's
no.
try to act like every wife in the whole world wouldn't be like, ooh, a diary.
Of course.
You know?
Poking through your husband's shit being like, what the fuck is this? Reading through it
but
and being like, are you kidding me?
To read it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Fine.
So the wife later admitted to taking the copy of the diary and sending it to the media. And I know. This is a viable piece of evidence. It's not the original. It is a copy. Correct. However, you can't take evidence home with you. Okay. You just can't, especially if you just retired, sir. Of course, they don't publish 84 pages of that diary.
No, but
so. But no one really had the right to read that. No. It's very upsetting. It's very disgraceful to her memory. I feel bad for her family.
Yeah.
No, it's your diary. You don't expect people to fucking.
No one's journal is ever meant to be read.
Wife admits it. And the police make a statement after this. They give no information as to why the wife sent the diary. Okay. No, nothing. The police only say that no laws have been broken.
Okay.
We're on to theories, Quinnies. We are going to get into some theories as to what may have happened to Jody. First one, stalker. Stalker, stalker,
totally.
Stalker, Quinnies.
Stalker
McStalker.
Okay.
Totally so realistic.
So Jody, we find out, had reportedly filed a police report in the months prior to her disappearance about a black pickup truck that had followed her while she was out rollerblading. For those of you who don't know what a rollerblade is, like literally, I'm just like aging myself so bad. She's out rollerblading outside. This is when people used to go outside. She's out getting some exercise. And this truck rolls up and it freaks her out so bad, driving slow behind her, antagonizing her. She actually goes to the police to report it. She called her mom and told her about it. How many times have we seen someone
countless.
In the weeks before something happens to them, call their mom call and be like, I'm
mom.
Freaked out. I'm freaked out. That's a true sign. You're freaked out. I don't want to discount her version of these events because I truly believe she was afraid. I don't think she would have gone to the police if she wasn't. I think that every woman in existence has this story. Every single woman has an instance of a weird ass dude in a car being weird around you when you're on foot.
And then you don't call the police and you don't do anything
right.
about it.
But like doesn't matter like where, doesn't matter yeah. when, doesn't matter
yeah.
what.
Well,
every one of yeah. us has this story.
It was more common during this time too.
Yes.
I think it was just way more common like in the 90s and the early 2000s, like this, people like catcalling and doing mm-hmm. things in their vehicles to women. And dry walking. I'm not saying it doesn't still happen because of course
yeah.
it's very much still 100% a thing, 100%.
Right.
But I think it just happened much more often back
right.
then because
right.
there were people a lot outside a lot more.
Yes. It's true. That's totally true, Quinnies. There's also a general consensus that people were creepy as hell to female anchors in Mason City, Iowa.
Oh, yeah.
During the time that Jody disappeared, this sentiment is echoed by numerous other anchors. Even Jody's associate producer actually says in an interview, her and Jody had talked about how scary it is to walk into the station at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
when there are so many creeps who basically just creep on news anchors. They are public figures and they get a lot of people who take that relationship that I see you on the news every day too far.
And I know you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So some people believe that this person, whomever it was, this creep watching the news or this person in a black pickup truck could have been responsible for Jody's disappearance. There's also a neighbor that comes forward, not during the initial canvassing, but afterward, and says that she heard pounding on Jody's door, on the apartment door, the night before she disappeared. And they heard someone say Jody's name and something to the effect of, "I know you're in there." We have no indication of who this person was. We don't know if she let them in. We don't know if they left. We don't know if they waited in the parking lot. We have no idea. And this person just heard this, which I'm kind of like, am I just the nosiest neighbor ever? Or I would be like peeking out the little, yeah, you know, like I would, sure, just be like, what the fuck's going on? That is a popular theory. She was stalked. Somebody waited for her. Now, if somebody waited for her to come out that morning, they waited a long fucking time,
yeah,
because she was way later than she ever would have been. She would deviated from her routine that morning. I don't know. We and really don't know.
Was the stalker calling her?
Is the stalker the person doing the nasty phone calls or the,
right,
the,
right,
annoying phone calls? Right.
It does. And it does seem realistic that it could be somebody watching, who was watching her on TV, yes, like who knew,
oh,
her,
yeah,
knew her from watching her. I mean,
right.
So that's, stalker's viable. Stalker can stay. I think that's totally legit. Totally it possible. Is. Then we got to talk about Tony Jackson, unfortunately.
Oh God. Okay.
Tony Jackson is a serial rapist who lived in close proximity to the KIMT station at the time Jody disappeared. Jody only lives 5 minutes away, 5 minutes from the station. So they technically live pretty close to each other. So Tony Jackson was convicted on 3 separate counts of rape in Minnesota in 1997. This is 2 years after Jody disappeared. Now, the assistant county attorney in Minnesota who prosecuted Jackson actually went on to speak to the media and say straight up, she believes he is responsible for the disappearance of Jody Huizentrout. From what she's seen and the information that she's been provided, she thinks he did it. Jackson has responded to these allegations. He has repeatedly denied any type of involvement. So why would you say something like that, assistant county attorney? I don't understand. Well, according to True Crime Garage, who does a great two-parter on this, they do a really good job. They just do a good job on everything.
Every
and I just
single
can't
one.
Like
every
recommend
time.
Them enough. Like every just time. Love them every time.
Totally agree.
Just the greatest.
When they want to do a collab episode,
they want to
anytime
do anytime they're ready know. For the anytime. Straight up evil energy, we're here. So this guy bought a car the day before Jody disappeared, but then had to return it shortly after because he wrote a bad check for the car and it bounced. So in the window of time where Jody Huizentrout disappears, he has a vehicle and then he doesn't have a vehicle. He also worked overnight. He worked the overnight shift at a local meatpacking plant. And the night before Jody disappeared, he went to work and he left early because he said that he hurt his leg and he was going to go to the emergency room. I don't know if he ever went to the emergency room. We don't know. On the day of Jody's actual disappearance, he went to work, but then he only stayed for an hour and he peaced out. And then after he is convicted on 3 counts of rape in Minnesota, right? And Jody's also from Minnesota, so people make that connection. His cellmate goes on to say that Jackson would often rap about a woman's body stiffening while he's in prison, that he would repeat this rap lyrics. She stiffened in Tiffin, which is a town close by.
Don't rap.
Please stop rapping.
Do not serenade me.
Do not serenade me.
Keep
Do not
your poetry
rap.
To yourself.
This actually, report from the cellmate, this leads to a search of a silo that was close to the meatpacking plant. Doesn't appear anything came from that search. But again, that's not the only place in Tiffin, Iowa. And it doesn't necessarily, it's not necessarily the right place to have searched. It's just the place that ended up being searched. So we don't know. Then somebody else comes out the woodwork after he's convicted of rape, right? So I think this is what's going on. Once he's convicted of rape, everybody's like, oh shit. Remember that time that he did that weird fucking thing? It all makes sense now, mm-hmm. right? We're seeing this with Brian Koberger. Remember that time when he was talking about my birthing hips and like God. Whatever, like now I get why he's a disgusting pig. Puke. So this guy comes forward. Friend of Tony Jackson. And he says he went to a place called the Southbridge Lounge with Tony Jackson and Jody Huizentrout was there. And Jackson walked right up to her and talked to her. And the guy says he didn't hear the conversation, but they looked like they knew each other or at least knew of each other. Like it didn't appear to be mm-hmm. the first conversation they ever had. But again, Jody is the morning news anchor in the area. So exactly. I think everybody is like, hey, I know you.
And she seemed to be the type of person to make a friend out of everyone.
Everyone.
Yes. Like,
right.
She's not going to be standoffish.
Then we have a woman who comes forward and says that she would go running by Jody's apartment complex every morning, nearly every morning. And the day before Jody was believed to be abducted, she saw a young Black man in his teens on a bicycle in the apartment complex where Jody lived. He was in the parking lot. And then on the day that Jody disappeared, this woman who was running was almost hit by a car that was flying out of the apartment complex that morning. She said that she literally had to dive onto the sidewalk to miss the car. The car had no headlights on, despite it being completely dark. At that time, Tony Jackson matches the description of a Black male in his teens. He was 19 years old at the time. And again, he had a car for that tiny window of time. Tony Jackson is an interesting wrinkle to this. I mean, he is a convicted rapist. We know that he's capable of violent acts.
It's just weird that the rapes that he did that he got convicted for were all within like a spree of time. Like he went on a spree within like a few weeks or something.
Yes.
Right.
2 years
right.
later. So it's like, what are the odds that he gets caught and found guilty of those particular group of rapes? And then there was nothing prior to, except for Jody. And then like, she's never found. You know what I mean? It's like,
right. What? And typically we see people who escalate. Right. So if he murdered someone in 1995, presumably because no one's ever heard from Jody Huizenture again, if he killed her, is it likely that he's going to commit just rapes after
exactly.
that?
Right.
Would he?
Just, yeah. Exactly.
Right. Of course.
And not,
rape is
and
moral,
not
like comparatively. And like,
comparatively.
Not,
yes.
Gonna de-
not kill
rape?
Them.
Yeah. It makes right. no sense.
I know. It's hard to believe.
But then in his interview
yeah.
with the police.
Yeah, because the police are interested. They're interested.
That interview was rough.
He's not doing himself any
favors.
He's
not doing any favors. But he literally is like, oh, well, why wouldn't she be dead then? Like, if I raped her, why would she be dead? Like, about the rapes.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, so you would kill her then? So you're saying you...
He's very arrogant. It's also like him calling into the media and being like, I'm innocent. He kind of likes... It seems like he likes to talk.
The infamy.
And he likes exactly to be associated with it, which we do see with people who commit crimes. So I don't know.
I think he's a bad dude.
Oh, for sure. I mean,
he's
convicted
a
rapist.
Up, terrible dude.
Like, yeah.
But I don't know that necessarily.
I think it's really reckless for that county attorney to be like,
yeah,
he did it.
It's weird.
Before we get into the really good theories, Quinny, it's just real quick about coworkers because the psychics brought it up. This gets brought up all the time. People hate Amy Coons online. There are so many subreddits. Credits about why she is a piece of shit. And I just don't agree.
I don't agree at
no.
all.
She was wondering where her freaking coworker was. Yeah.
Honestly. And like I appreciate that she was
frustrated.
Like, no, we weren't friends. And yes, I was pissed at her. Like, that seems honest to me.
It
like
is.
She was just yeah. like, no. I mean, anytime someone no calls, no shows, and you're stuck at work, you're like, really?
You're
really?
Like, this bitch, where the hell is she?
People get yes. more angry about way less at the mm-hmm. workplace. A freaking
yes.
the copier etiquette you can get a whole snafu about. And like, this is much bigger than that.
Jody's surprise party. Amy didn't go to that party. She wasn't invited to that party. Like, they were not friends.
Yeah.
So she had every reason to be like, what the fuck? You're my coworker. You didn't show up. I'm annoyed. And also, if you remember from Sherry Papini, okay, the cops think this was an abduction and women don't abduct people. It's not a thing.
Yeah.
It happens, but it's so
rare. It is
rare.
So rare. It's like 1%, literally.
It is
I just
so
hate
rare.
Having to talk about Sherry Papini.
I know.
Capacity.
Another coworker at KIMT, I don't know, man. They kept her job open.
Yeah.
They're running stories
They're
about
waiting
her.
For her.
Everybody was at work.
No.
Yeah.
Like that really knew her that she worked with.
They're the ones
They're
that called 911, for God's sake.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
within 15 minutes of getting off the air, the police are at her apartment complex, thanks to her job. I just don't see it.
Who knows how long it could have gone if they didn't do that.
And yes, people get jealous. And yes, people want to push you out of your position. But honestly, from everyone's account, Jody Huizenture was on her way up. She was not going to stay in Mason City, Iowa. She was going to keep building her career. And that was that.
And she was already traveling and hopping a bunch as it is.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So. Now we got to talk about a cover-up, Quinnies.
All
the
way
to
the top.
To the top. bitches.
All the way to the top, second to last theory is the cover-up. So we already have the random husband-wife domestic drama with the journal. May 2015. Every single member of the Iowa House of Representatives signs a letter asking Mason City to declare June 27th Jody Huzentrude Day in honor of her memory and of all the victims of unsolved cold cases in Iowa. Beautiful. Love it. Love it so much. What a great idea. They straight up said no.
For what? For why?
So rude.
It's literally like, what it's do like, you have to say for yourself?
It's like offensive.
It is.
Like, I'm actually offended. This is like the memorial on the side of the road for Maura Murray.
Oh, my God.
That Quinny was talking about. It's like...
This is the memorial for the Hyatt collapse.
This is the Hyatt collapse. Again.
Yeah.
This is not about you, unfortunately.
Keep their name alive at the very least.
Like, she seriously meant something to that community. Within 24 hours of her disappearance prior, she was raising money for charity, you dicks. Okay, straight up said no, fine. Bureaucratic bullshit, that's what we can call it, fine. Then, in 2016, a state representative, his name is John Coiker. He is from Sioux County, and he said that while he was a member of the House of Representatives, he was on a committee called the Iowa House Public Safety Committee, and they did a special inquiry into the Jody Huzentrude case, and he straight up says that the Mason City officials covered up her death.
But why?
He doesn't outright say it was a police officer. He doesn't outright say that it was a law enforcement snafu. Something went wrong. They picked her up and she got hurt and they covered it up. No, he just says that the officials in Mason City hid her death. That's a very accusation.
Yeah, you
from a state representative.
Yeah,
you do not just throw that around.
Yeah,
you don't just say that.
Like, we can't even get a California person to talk about the Lost Hill Sheriff's Department. And this guy, unprompted, is like, something went on there.
What's his name?
His name is John Coiker, and it is K-O-O-I-K-E-R. Retired Iowa State Representative from Sioux County. 2017, after he retires, he goes to the press and tells them he believes that Mason City officials covered up the death of Jody Huzentrude.
It makes me feel like he saw something or heard something.
I mean, I think that a lot of people were really pissed when they wrote that letter and asked the city to do that. And they were like, no.
I just have to keep muting myself because I'm stress eating an entire bag of fucking Skittles right now.
It's very frustrating, Quinny.
It really is.
So he's not the only one who says that the Mason City officials have something to do with this. When you have some time, just get on the old Reddit, look up the hashtag Jody Huzentrude, and just sift through how many people think that the cops are crooked in this case because of the lack of information, because of things that we don't know, things that they didn't do, things that, you know, it's just, we see this all the time with unsolved cases. Law enforcement doesn't give any answers and people speculate.
Something's fishy about it.
But then it gets a little weirder. Okay, so now we have the journal sent to the paper. And then they won't declare Jody Huzentrude Day. And then this guy comes forward and says, hey, we looked into this and something's wrong. Then Find Jody, wonderful organization. Again, cannot stress enough. Check them out. They put up 4 billboards in 2018 with information about Jody's case and a big thing that says someone knows something, right? They give the info on how to leave tips up for 2 years. 4 different locations. January of 2020, somebody vandalizes one of these billboards and spray paints Frank Stern's machine shed in yellow paint across this fucking billboard. Frank Stern's has since retired, but he was the lead investigator in Jody's case.
I went down a rabbit hole just Googling the phrase machine shed.
Machine shed. Yes.
It's strange.
And like with the police off, like with the officer's name, like the investigator's name, like no.
I don't like it.
No. And now, so now we have the journal, the no Jody Huzentrude Day, the accusation from a freaking House representative. And now we have somebody anonymously. This is 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Saying just- this investigator.
25 it's years deflection. After, or 24 years after she went missing. Like, yeah, what?
There is a lot swirling around that cover-up theory, and I don't fully understand it. Like, we don't know enough about what was going on with law enforcement during this time, but that's a lot. That's four separate instances of, like, where you're just, like, scratching your head. Like,
and,
what?
Like, not even at the time. Like, the journal, way later. The
way billboard, later. Way 2008, later. 2016, you know what I mean? Like, 2017, 2020.
10 years later, like, what? What?
Yeah, it's something's fishy about it.
Quinnies, yep. We have arrived at John Van Cise. We're at him.
Ah!
Okay.
The time has come.
What do we know? The dude threw the party for Jody. He says he was the last person who saw her alive the night before she disappeared. John is an interesting dude.
That's a word. Okay. Uh-huh. That is a word to use for him. A
couple of details that we haven't shared about John. He is 20 years older than Jody. So he is almost 50. In 1995. So Jody's 27. He's damn near 50. Again, just like we said last week, age is just a number, whatever.
May, but December, let's, relationship. Fine.
But let's also, like, calm it
also
down a little bit.
Just remind let's ourselves. She's a gorgeous 27-year-old woman, and he is 50. So we know that
you're Jody's- an old man with old balls. Bang!
Quinny, is that Adam Sandler?
Yes. Yeah,
with
from
his
Big
wrinkly,
Daddy.
It's wrinkly old balls.
Wrinkly old balls.
We know that Jody's family actually knew about John. They understood that they had similar hobbies. He has a boat. She loves to water ski. They both love to play golf. The family understood that they were just friends. He was not a secret. Her friends knew him. Even when family came to visit, she introduced him. This is my friend John. So at least we know he's not some rando waiting in the wings like Daniel Nellis, Quinnies.
Oh, my God. God.
I think it's very possible that he could have possibly been a little bit obsessed with her.
One million percent.
Quinnies, her friends
didn't fucking like him.
Her friends, not only did they not like him, they were like, he wanted more from her and she was not into it. So
allegedly, they quote unquote both agreed to remain friends after discussing a possible
mutual.
Not
and then on the invitations to her party, it says thrown by John Van Cise and friends. Like, why do you have to put, like, why can't you just say thrown by her friends? His boat's named Jody. Don't forget. And it is named after Jody. He admits it's named after Jody. John's son has gone on to say that there was a father-daughter thing going on with John and Jody because Jody lost her dad at a young age. He said it was a really nice platonic relationship between the two of them. Jody's friends do not agree.
Yeah, and I trust the friends. Sorry. Sure.
And then people are like, was she ever at his house the night before? Was he at her house? Who the hell was banging on the door? Only he knows if she was there, and he puts himself in the middle of this because he establishes she was with me.
That they were together. Yeah.
So the police search John's basement in 2010.
Oh my God.
They find no evidence of Jody having been there, but that was 15 years after she disappeared.
Yeah. Everyone else that was in the police force died at that point, probably. No offense, baby boomers.
Oh my God. Then in March of 2017, you're just like, oh, okay, let's wait another 7 years. They do a search warrant on John's two vehicles. They're looking for data on two of his vehicles. So he doesn't even live there anymore. He's in Arizona and he's 72 years old. Okay. The vehicles are a 1999 Honda Civic and a 2013 GMC 1500 truck. Warrants are sealed to this day and no information was ever available or made publicly available about why they searched those or what they found in them.
Didn't he move to Arizona like not long after she went missing?
Not long at all. And to be fair, I mean, he is of the age where you move to a warmer climate. But it is cold as shit in the Midwest.
Yeah.
But
if he's still like obsessed with her and holding out hope she's going to come back, the possibility that he called the station that morning.
Yeah. So will you explain this, Carly? Because I don't understand this at all. I don't understand how there's a possibility, because I don't understand why you wouldn't have a phone record.
Yeah. So that's what's weird. So I believe Amy,
okay,
the producer, who stated, oh, maybe it was Robin, but I think it was Amy, around 7:30 maybe-ish that morning that Jody went missing, a phone call at the station looking for Jody came in, and the person identified themselves as just John, just wanting to speak to Jody or just asking if she was there. She obviously was not, because this was all going down. But it was roughly around the time when like police are actively looking for her at the at the crime scene. And we don't know for certain it was John Van Sice, but like what other John
would know where she works,
that she would be there normally.
So weird. I don't like it.
Like, so did he see the police outside of her apartment and be like,
that's what I'm,
oh shit,
I'm assuming.
And she had just said she wants to change her freaking phone number.
Exactly.
And John's calling the station like
and
that.
And somebody's banging on the door the night before. Jody, I know you're in there.
Calling it to be like, oh my God, I was so concerned. I saw police around her car. Is she there at work? Oh my God.
I figured she was at work.
I had no idea that anything has happened to her at all, ever.
He is the closest person to her in this.
Yep.
He is constantly showing up. He shows up at the crime scene. He's putting himself in the timeline.
He's naming a fucking boat after her. Oh, we're just gonna be friends. Yeah. Also, even if it were true that she went to his house to view the birthday video, the fact just let's say it's true and it happened, it speaks to me that he is just grasping at fucking straws to get her within his sights in
whenever he can.
That like he's so fucking thirsty that he's like, please come over and watch the video that you I experienced. Recorded
yes.
Of the that you were there. Time. You were there the whole fucking time. Birthday party.
But I just that want you to
I
watch
threw
it.
For you that I was also there the entire time.
I know.
It's like watch this video.
It's like back in the day when you used to like look at people's vacation photos on the like when they would you weren't there. So you would be able to see like, oh, this is where we went. This is what we did. But you're right, Carly. They were both at that party.
And it was only like a week or so prior.
Yeah.
Remember last year at your 21st birthday? Like,
no, it was fucking 3 weeks ago.
I remember exactly because I was there.
I just lived it. The whole time. I experienced it.
I was there the whole time.
I don't like it.
So that to me, it's either he's so fucking thirsty that like he is going to do anything to get her. He definitely could be banging on her door. Like, I know you're in there, Jody. I just saw you. Blah, blah, blah. I see you with the window. No, John. If she was there, that is not what was.
No,
that's not what you thought was going to happen.
No.
And bottom line, he made himself the last person with her.
He put himself there. Yes, Quinny.
Idiot. Like,
I know. I kind of feel bad for his son too, because he's like trying to see the best in the situation.
Of course.
And you're like from the outside looking in, though, dude. It's fucking weird.
Did he bang on the door and eventually get in, whether she let him in or not? He's the reason the toilet seat is up. He absolutely strikes me as a man who forgets to put the toilet seat down
and would drink Bud Light
1,000,000% and drinking BLs.
Did he come over and was he the one calling her
all the time?
Is he fucking with her? Oh, I'm trying to make her nervous so that she has to latch on to another person in an area that she doesn't know. I've been getting these calls. I'm scared.
Your father figure will help you. I'll be around. I'll make sure you're okay. I'll do this. Like, no. I just don't understand like why she wanted to hang out with him so much. Like, I get that she lost her father because it was reciprocal. It was. And like her friends were like, why? And they were like, we don't want to come. And she was like, oh, I'm going to spend some more time with John. Like, she's bringing him around the family.
You know, we all have that friend that can't lay down the law.
That's true.
People who they just need to say, you need to get out of here, man. You gotta go. We all have that friend who's just a little bit too nice and not capable of being like, you need to go now.
Later, Pete.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But then there's the thing about the car.
Okay. What about the car?
How she had just bought the car for her birthday.
Right. So the car is a recent acquisition.
It's not a practical car by any means for where she lives, but like,
it's a little red, like, you know,
car. Yeah. Low on the ground. But like, she's not making tons of money. Her family didn't buy it for her. She bought it for her through like a private salesman, like whatever. He has money for a boat.
Is it? Yeah. Was there a gift in there? Mm-hmm. Did he buy it for her? And it's one of those situations.
He's not going to say now.
Or is she investing in her future and being like, I'm going to be a successful woman.
Right.
I'm going to do this damn thing. Right. That it's possible.
I'm not saying she couldn't do it on her own. She definitely seems like she could have,
but yes, he's in the picture and he's throwing shit at her like left and right. The party and the boat and
the regular scheme.
I don't like it.
No,
I just don't like it at all.
Quinny's final thoughts. Jody isn't true.
Really quick. Do we have any idea what John Van Sice did for a living?
He's only described as a local businessman.
I think that he like owns a business. So like he's an employer.
Like a fucking auto dealership.
Yes.
Or something.
I'm envisioning Billy Fusillo.
Oh my
he's
God.
Huge.
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 I mean,
yeah.
She struggled. It's a tough one. She really tried.
Oh, hell yeah. She fought.
I bet she fought like hell, I'm sure.
Yeah. Key being bent, the mirror being pulled back, the drag marks on the ground.
That's some nightmare shit. That's like what you imagine happening in your freaking nightmares. It's terrible.
It really is.
But I don't know, Quinny. The police cover up is compelling to me.
It is.
All these weird. It is compelling. Things, like John aside,
and so many covered,
things. So many and things.
We have covered a lot of cases where we have seen instances. There is a reason as to why they are like
not willing.
Hiding. Why they're hiding things. Why they aren't telling you things. Why they are keeping things from you.
You have to consider it. There's too many things, man. That's too many things
it's
in
too
that
many
department.
Weird. Shit,
and is it too much weird is shit. It that they covered it up, or is it just another example of truly how messy and not put together this investigation was?
Exactly. Is it incompetence or is it calculated?
Yeah, it's one of those where you can't figure it out. It just leaves you chasing your tail. Did somebody cut her power? Because I just don't know if she overslept because the thing is, the blow dryer she brought with her. And I have to believe that at a news station, you have hair and makeup.
I will say, I
but she I don't probably wanted her own, so. She probably because wanted her personal hair dryer. It was probably like her personal specific hair dryer, I bet.
I say that because I follow this girl who is on the news. She's like 25. I think she does like the weather, technically, like the local weather for a local station. She has to have her own dress. She has to do all her own hair and makeup.
Okay.
And it's like kind of parallel to like where Jody seems to be. She wasn't an anchor, but okay. And she often does a get ready with me video at the station. So she just like goes to the station in whatever and then brings everything with her.
So totally normal then for her to have all that shit with her.
I would assume. Yeah, I do think so.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Because
she probably left with a wet head, I'm imagining, you know?
Right.
She overslept. She just quickly slapped together. I'll get ready really quick at the station. And then that way I'm not more late.
And this person came up on her.
If your phone rings and you pick it up at that time, and they go, where the hell are you? And you go, what time is it? Why can't you look at your alarm clock that's plugged right in next to your bed?
Right.
Maybe because the alarm clock is not on.
Right.
Because the power is not on. So I
had gone out.
Or the power had gone out at some point.
So like for the phone to work.
A landline plugged into the phone line that is an old school corded doesn't necessarily need power.
Okay.
So BTK cut the phone and the power.
Right.
Israel Keyes just cut the power.
Right.
You know, so anytime we have a situation like this, I just think of these nasty, fucking disgusting people. If somebody really was waiting for her, were they trying to effectively ruin her day and mess up her schedule and turn this into a moment where she did not expect, where she was right. in a hurry and she would not have seen. That's very calculated.
Right. It is.
But I just wonder. I want to know if really her briefcase was gone. Yeah. I really want to know that. And then honestly, Quinnies, my absolute biggest thing in this whole case is how the fuck do you not search his boat? This whole time, I'm sorry, the boat that is named after our victim.
You don't even step foot on it. You don't step your feet on the boat.
You
don't
search the river.
Feast your eyes on the boat.
You
one
didn't
singular
put the
time.
Dogs. You didn't take the dogs and put the dogs on the boat?
Honestly,
I'll never get
that
over
is,
it.
That is mind
her,
blowing.
It's her fucking name on the boat. Dude.
It's literally, like, it's the victim's boat. Name is on the side of the boat. And the guy admits, I named it after her. Well, Quinnies, Jody Huizentrout was a 27-year-old Caucasian woman with blonde hair and brown eyes. She was 5'4" to 5'5" tall, and she weighed approximately 110 to 115 pounds. If you have any information regarding the disappearance of Jody Huizentrout, go directly to findjody.com. They have all of the information that you need to get you in touch with any agency that's involved in this case, including the FBI. And you can also submit a tip there as well. They have a submit a tip button. They make it very easy for you. This is so frustrating and upsetting. And I cannot believe, I'm not over the fact that it's 27 years later and we're just like chilling.
And nothing, I can't get
like,
over
nothing
the fact
has
that like,
really happened.
20 years later and people are still vandalizing billboards over the fucking thing.
And the police say that they're still actively investigating this, but like that's part of the story. The public is still trying to get some kind of message out.
And I'm sorry, do they not have a camera? Do they not get security footage of somebody vandalizing this billboard either?
I know.
That's what's surprising to me,
the
too.
The cameras, man. I can't.
You would think. I really would think. Oh, Quinnies, that's Jody Huizentrout.
Quinnies. Oh, my God.
We could be here all night.
We could.
Listen to Straight Up Evil.